for me, for that's how it would seem to my pious countrymen. And yet, that wasn't the worst of it, as I learned when we'd led our Scrooge through the rubble-strewn streets and past the shattered walls of what had once been shops and churches and stone houses, and came to the broad plaza before the burned-out shell of the huge palace, once the largest building, they say, between Egypt and the Cape, where long-dead kings of Abyssinia had kept their courts amidst the wealth and splendour of a continent. If Prester John existed, this was where he'd sat his throne, where the scorpions and lizards now scuttled among the broken masonry. Once it must have been the wonder of Africa, a great city of fabulous wealth and 10,000 inhabitants. Now it reminded me of those age-old ruins of North Africa and Middle Asia, and I must have asked aloud for the 20th time, what in God's name had possessed Theodore to destroy such grandeur?
"Because he hated it," says Ulaba contemptuously, "not only for its comfort given to rebels, but for its splendour and treasure and traditions which seem to mock his stolen royalty. Gondar the Great, the glory of Habesh, a noble city of nobles, was a living reproach to the purge seller's brat."
It came on to rain at sunset, one of those crashing tropical downpours with sheet lightning crackling on the western horizon and thunder booming overhead. So we bivouacked in the porch of one of the four churches which were the only buildings Theodore had left standing. It was dry and snug with the outer door pulled to, cutting us off from the city's desolation. And when I'd lit a fire with one of my Vesuvians, Ulaba, such a worldly wise and cultivated little savage in so many ways, had cried out in alarm the first time I'd used one. She set to work preparing a stew of game and kid. I led our beasts through the arch into the empty nave, where I spread their fodder and rubbed them down, and took a quick deco around in the last of the light from the high, unglazed windows. Theodore might have spared the building, but he'd stripped it bare. There was nothing but a broken font and a bare altar, behind which was another of those crazy frescoes which I've already told you of. This one depicted the children of Israel crossing the Red Sea, pursued by Pharaoh's army, who were holding their muskets over their heads, presumably to keep their ancient Egyptian powder dry. For the rest, there was nothing but a heavy trapdoor in the wooden floor, which covered the area before the altar. Elsewhere, the floor was bare earth to the walls, in one of which there was a closed side door. I heaved up the trap, whose slats were warped and shrunk with age, and there beneath was a small cellar, about 12 feet by 12 and 8 deep, empty but for a few ancient pots, and no doubt interesting assorted insect life. I replaced the trap and joined Ulaba in the porch, where we ate our supper by the shadowy firelight, with the storm bellowing outside. And now she told me the full, unspeakable tale of what Theodore had done to the old city in the autumn of 66.
He had wrested tribute from it in the past, so the people expected no more than another shearing of their golden fleece, and came out to greet their emperor, protesting loyalty and hoping to win his favour. They might as well have tried to charm a crocodile. Although the rebels had fled away at his approach, their recent presence was all the excuse Theodore needed to loot the city to its final ruin. The wealth of Selesi, the gold of Kuxuam, the silver of Bata, the gems from the mines of Solomon beyond the mountains of the moon, the silks and paintings, and even the precious manuscripts were all plundered to the uttermost scrap and coin. Never was such a pillaging. Aye, they lived richly in the Gondar that was.
She poured us cups of Tej and sat back against the wall, golden in the firelight, sipping her cup and telling her dreadful tale as lightly as a fairy story.
But to strip the city to its ruins was not enough. Gondar itself must cease to be. Its citizens, all 10,000, were herded out like cattle, and the whole town given to the flames. The palace, the treasury, the 40 churches, the fine homes of the rich and the hovels of the poor. Gondar burned from end to end, and the glow was seen in the sky from Lake Ashangi to the frontiers of Tigray and Sudan. And when the priests cried out, calling down curses on his head, he had them bound, hundreds of aged men and thrown into the fire so that they burned alive to the last man. But did that satisfy him, do you think?
Gillian Ford